Hi, everyone, and welcome to First State Insights, a podcast presented by the University of Delaware's Institute for Public Administration. That's IPA for short. My name is Troy Mix. I'm Associate Director at IPA and your host for this episode. I'm back with another Freight Friday edition of First State Insights, brought to you through a partnership of IPA and the Delmarva Freight Working Group, an ongoing transportation planning and economic development partnership coordinated by IPA, the Delaware Department of Transportation, and Delaware's three metropolitan planning organizations, the Dover-Kent County MPO, the Salisbury-Wicomico MPO, and WMAPCO. My guest today is Allison Cusack. Allison is the founder and principal lawyer of Cusack & Company Maritime Law Services, an innovative and forward-thinking firm based in Melbourne, Australia. In addition to her career as a maritime lawyer, Allison is the immediate past president of the Australian chapter of the Women's International Shipping and Trading Association. She's also a former lecturer at Victoria University and the mastermind behind Propel Forward, a shipping 101 course she runs through Cusack & Company Academy. On November 7th, 2023, I spoke with Allison about everything from maritime law and how she started in the industry to her new book, A Short History of Maritime, and her firm's digital comic book series, Container Jack, which mixes a dose of entertainment with education about the shipping industry. Let's get to the conversation. Allison, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
So I think this is going to be the first podcast where we talk about comic books, where I'm able to talk about comic books, and we'll get there, I think. But I want to go a little more official to kind of a December 2021 article on Splash that I found, the contribution you made called The Never Forgotten. You made the general point that the opportunity was there during the pandemic in light of things like the Ever Given and the Suez Canal and just people trying to get goods to their household, that this was a great opportunity to raise awareness about the industry. And I wonder if you could kind of take us back to what you were thinking at the time and then maybe reflect a little bit on, did the industry succeed in raising awareness?
Absolutely. So the Splash article actually came off the back of a viral LinkedIn post that I had, which was the cover of the New Yorker and Santa, you know, pulling in the tow lines to bring the ship in, you know, to save Christmas. And I had put a little, very little caption on it saying, you know, 2021 is the year that the public discovered shipping, May 2022 be the year the public discover seafarers, which led to a hilarious number of comments about how the illustration was not accurate and a lot of mariners taking umbrage with where all the ship positioning was. But that aside, having been in one of the toughest lockdowns in Melbourne, I especially knew how hard it was to be in lockdown, but I had from a very young time in my career, worked with the Mission to Seafarers in Melbourne and wider. And what it is that they come and assist the seafarers who are in port, and they'll take a bus down, a courtesy bus down, bring them into port, get them gloves, get them shaving kits, get them SIM cards, you know, let them call home to their family. And I've always really sympathized with the seafarers because no one knows about shipping, which means no one knows about seafarers. And they were doing it incredibly tough during lockdown because their contracts were being renewed and there was border closures. And so every opportunity I had, I really wanted to use my voice to let people know that, yes, it was crappy being stuck at home, but you had the internet, you had Tiger King, you had Uber Eats, you know, you were waiting on your, you know, Walmart or your Target or in Australia, your Kmart delivery. And, you know, for the most part, you had those seemingly basics, but to seafarers, luxuries. So I just really wanted to say, hey, let's capitalize on this and let's take our invisible industry and let's get the word out there so that people recognize how tough the job is, how well we've been doing. Because, you know, they always say that if no one's complaining and no one knows about it, that you're doing a really good job. So yeah, that's kind of the point that I was making. Hey, let's keep the awareness going and let's grow it and let's become the, you know, the number one on Forbes. Do you know what I mean? Like the personality of the year should have been shipping because we kept the world moving during lockdown.
Looking back now, almost 2 years later, do you think the industry did a good job seizing on that? or are we still kind of in a place where people don't really know what they're talking about when crises happen and we speculate about a lot of things?
Look, as Gen Z would say, I think we fumbled the bag. I think we had a really great opportunity and I think we just squandered it. And that's for a variety of reasons. One, everyone was literally under the pump, right? Our supply chain personnel have never been worked so hard in their life and hasn't let up yet. But there was almost this kind of, well, it's not our job. It's not our job to tell people we exist. You know, we're one of the largest industries in the world. Why, you know, if they don't know now, bad luck. Which I think is really disappointing, right? Because there's amazing things that we do in this industry and there's amazing skill sets. And every single person I speak to in shipping literally says, I fell into this career. And how are you getting the best possible people into this amazing industry if you're waiting for people to fall into it? That seems collectively a really bad strategy decision by the industry to just keep waiting for people to fall into a career as opposed to positioning it as this is the most dynamic, interesting, tech-savvy industry that goes around.
And did you fall into the career or how did you become the shipping lawyer, so to speak?
So, the shipping lawyer was free real estate on TikTok. And I was like, I'll just call myself the shipping lawyer. It's pretty memorable. Let's go. I got into it actually through uni. So I started off being an electrical engineer in my studies. Very rare for a lawyer who also can do maths, I know. And I switched into law commerce. And in law school, you do these fake law competitions called moots. And you get really into it, right? You're like, yeah, I get to do all these extracurriculars and it's going to be great for my job prospects. And, you know, you really, they call them moot junkies, which is pretty apropos. And I'd missed out on one of the premium moot competitions, which go to Vienna. And they were like, oh, well, you know, if you want to do this maritime moot, international IMLAM, International Maritime Arbitration moot, if you want to give up your entire summer, self-teach yourself maritime law and arbitration law, have at it. And of course, as a very eager law student, I was like, yes, I would love to give up my summer and just learn about this really random area of law, which they didn't even teach. So in my state, in Victoria, no undergraduate degrees taught maritime law. So it was just really read the textbook and hope for the best. And when you come from electrical engineering, which is 10 to the negative 9, you're all in nanos and sort of almost invisibleness. And a lot of law concepts are invisible as well, right? They're ethereal, like the concept of money and IP and corporations, they're all these intangibles. And then you get to maritime, you're like, ship runs into wharf, boxes spill over, there it is, there's your loss. And you're like, you know what? I really enjoy something this large and concrete and, you know, like right in front of my face. And I was just hooked. I was just hooked straight away. And I was like, this is what I'm going to do. This is what I'm going to practice. And very well-meaning people in the industry were like, Alison, maybe that's a little too early to niche down. Maybe learn about some other areas of law. And I was like, no, this is the most excited I've ever been. I love it. I want to live it. And yeah, I would not be deterred. And I still love it. I'm a huge nerd for shipping law.
And it strikes me that, you know, there's a lot of legal concepts and theory to learn around shipping. And then there's kind of the maritime history and tradition and language to learn.
No, but it's so exciting, right? Because it's, you know, everyone goes, oh, it's so cliche to go, it's living history, but it is living history. I mean, you get to do stuff and you get this ties to the past and it's, and you know, I'm living in a relatively young country, right? A young colonized country. And so there's this living history in shipping, which spans back to, you know, Rhodesian times with General Average, which is my pet subject, which I promise I won't bore your audience with, even though I find it fascinating. But do you know what I mean? There's this lineage and there's history and there is this influence, like company law, which is found in, you know, every country, was based off of the Dutch East India Trading Company. That was the first company. Shipping really has influenced so many areas of life, for better and for worse, that it permeates through everything. And you can always come back to this. And I just think it's really nice to have an industry which has this lineage. You know, it's got its idiosyncrasies and its quirks, and they're usually, in my experience with what I've come across, are harmless quirks. So it's just character, right? It's history and character.
And, you know, I can remember learning a little bit, emphasis on a little bit, about the Dutch East India Company in high school history class, for example. There's just not a real focus on it in everyday life, at least in the U.S. context, from my perspective, at least. So if you were to meet a novice about shipping, like me, let's say, what would you recommend they read and watch to kind of have the beginnings of perceptions about the industry that are accurate, and then over time kind of grow a greater appreciation for the realities of the industry?
I think it would depend if they were idly curious or they were in the industry and they were kind of circling in inward bound, right? So, I mean, I've just released a great novel, which you've read, in fact.
That's right.
Which I checked it today, actually, out of curiosity to see how it was going. And it's now number 2 on the bestsellers list of mass transit, taking down British passenger rail one book at a time. They've got like 1 million of them. So it's called A Short History of Maritime, A Cheap Guide for Landlubbers and the Landlocked. I think it's great because I wrote it, but you've read it, so you might have a different opinion. But it's really to try and place in part where things are, give you a bit of framing. I always describe shipping as, you know, the closet to Narnia. Everyone thinks, oh, it's just this little tiny, you know, if you're in a room full of all the lore and all the industries and everyone's on the front shelves and you're like, oh, what's in this little cupboard here, you know, tucked away, and go through the back and that's shipping. And then you go, oh, well, it must be small, right? Because it's tucked away in this little cupboard, door closed. And then you step through and you go, oh my goodness, this is a whole entirely different world. And you've got bulk carriers and you've got LNG and you have wind farms and you have offshore and you have containerized. But within that, you've got dangerous goods and international conventions and the Jones Act and ports and automation and people who are really high tech and people who are really low tech, and you're in all these different countries and all these different rules, and how do you smush them all together cohesively? It can be incredibly overwhelming, right? Because people go, oh my God, where do you start? And I thought, well, let's start at the beginning, right? Just give you a baseline and go, and this is what we did, and this is what we did, and here are the kind of highlights of things so you can place them. And here's who's who in the zoo. Once you're in, you're like, oh yeah, I know who Maersk is and MSC, and I know this, and the IMO and the SecGen and, you know, UNSTAD and blah, blah. And everyone's like, I don't, so how many acronyms could you possibly have? And I was like, oh, so many more than you could ever imagine. And we double them up, and they're based on context just to make your life that little bit more fun. So that's why we did the book. And then if you have questions about topical issues, there's a number of commentators who are posting regularly on, and one would be Sal Mocogliano, who does What's Going On with Shipping, and he has a great YouTube channel, and he will go on and talk about topical things and what's going on, literally the names and the, you know, title. But you can go through his back catalog and find me. We did a session on the port fire in Iskandaran, and the earthquake happened in Turkey, and then all the containers fell in the port and then they ignited. So that's what I would do. But also, if you're on LinkedIn, I would go follow a few key commentators. Follow me, see who I interact with, follow the rabbit hole, and you'll probably find who you gel with and what area you want to be in. So for instance, I'm purely containerization. I dabble in a bit of other things for clients, but my main focus is containerization. So if you're looking to get into bulk, that's not going to help. If you're looking to get into containerization, you know, follow me. So that's where I would start. And then just pick up the threads organically. Never assume you know everything, and never trust anyone who says they know everything, because no one had seen the Suez Canal blocked before. There's always something new and different, similar, same, same, but different. So that's what I would say. But yeah, you've read the book.
I gave it 5 stars. I expect that it's not skewed it upward. I expect that there's all kinds of 5-star reviews of the book. But no, I really, really enjoyed it. You know, I joked, I really didn't learn about Dutch East India Company much. And I feel like I learned more in your book in, you know, a short form than I have in the rest of my life. And maybe that's admitting some ignorance, but I think the who's who in the zoo was really valuable. I think from my vantage point in the US, it's kind of odd to look at a whole industry where the US government has some power and authority over it, but there's a lot of governance of shipping that takes place outside our borders. And it's really mysterious just to know what the acronyms stand for, frankly.
Well, every time I talk about the IMO, people's brains somehow default to IMF and think I'm talking about the International Monetary Fund. So if anyone's listening and is like, why does my subconscious keep thinking I'm talking about monetary fund? That's super common. And, you know, people are talking about the UN currently for a variety of reasons, which we won't go into. And people, I'm like, no, but the International Maritime Organization, the IMO, sits under the UN and does an incredible amount for safety. And it's not just safety at sea, which is a lot of it. That's the SOLAS, which comes off literally the sinking of the Titanic is what created the Safety of Life at Sea Convention. So when you see those memes going, what if the Titanic had never sunk? We wouldn't have the Safety of Life at Sea Convention, and we would have probably lost thousands more lives as a result. But it also looks after pollution, marine pollution and environmental pollution, and looks after and is regulating CO2 emissions for the industry as a global industry with no real, as you said, borders. And it's maybe a great time, if I can, to talk to demystify some persistent myths about the shipping industry. Yes, if the shipping industry was a country, it'd be the sixth largest polluter of CO2. Absolutely. But since 2008 to now, which is 15 years, there's been an increase of 40% in volume. There's been 97% in tonnage, right? So nearly a doubling of the world's fleet if you took it at a one-to-one basis. And yet, even though we've doubled the fleet and increased volume by 40% in 15 years, we've decreased carbon emissions by 14%, which is a pretty good effort. And we're introducing things. Well, not we, the IMO is introducing things like the EEXI, which is going to literally measure the amount of carbon CO2 output from the funnels of all ships that sail. And they're going to get an energy efficiency rating. And if they drop too low, likely going to be banned from ports altogether. So the shipping industry is doing a huge amount of effort to reduce its CO. We've done a huge amount of effort to reduce our sulfur output. So, you know, there's this myth of like, oh, shipping's big and dirty and whatever. And it's like, yeah, but also we move goods around the world and we move medicines around the world and we move fuel around the world and we move critical supplies around the world. So if you don't want as much CO2, you can stop buying. That's a choice. But there will still be, you know, there is a need and there is a move to greener fuels, but they have their own set of problems.
And I think one of the eye-opening things for me as someone who was paying attention, and I imagine for a lot of other people too, was just how much profit players like Maersk made during the pandemic. It was like this eye-popping number that for a lot of people seemed like, how did this happen? Yeah. And then I think you could just end the story there and be like, they're too big and have too much money. I know the situation is a little different right now. The news recently was kind of layoffs in the news, but I also know there's a lot of investments that have come from incredible profits.
It's insane, right? Because if you look at the numbers in isolation, as you said, you'd go, well, this is BS and it's all an oligopoly. And it is, it's a well-known oligopoly, right? There is like 10 major players and they look after 90% of the world's trade. Sure. And there's different regulations in different countries to try and combat that. But the other thing is, you know, what they made in 1 year made up for the last 10 years of losses. That's the piece that people don't know. It's very cyclical. I'm not coming out here to defend the carriers by any means because I, you know, my target audience is freight forwarders and cargo interests, and I've definitively switched sides. there's enough to criticize for without, you know, bending the truth a bit. At the moment, for instance, people think that freight rates are still high because of collusion and competition and, you know, anti-competition collaboration. But actually, freight has never been cheaper. It is at its lowest point. They're also investing in new builds, right? And so the thing is, by 2050, they want to get down to 0% net carbon emissions in the shipping industry. The life of a vessel is approximately 25 years if you look after her well. A new build takes approximately 2 years to build. So now we have to build the ships of carbon net zero today. But there's so many alternative fuels, but you need that sort of mass agreement. Do you know what I mean? You need to tip over into that point, because it's all fine if you go, I'm going to have this type of alternative fuel, but then it has to be stocked everywhere that you need it so you can buy it, so you can use it. So everyone at the moment is kind of going, I don't want to choose wrong, because if you choose wrong, you know, it's catastrophic. And the thing is, you want as many players in the game to succeed and thrive and survive, because then you do get that long-term competition.
This is where I think it's foreign to a lot of people. Like, at some point, the players in the industry ceded some authority to international organizations to help to facilitate the agreeance, as you put it, on these major standards. Is that fair to say?
No, I don't think so, because the IMO can dictate. There's been a few instances where they've gone, you will do this and you will comply. And there's been, you know, they've brought the carriers kicking and screaming like toddlers. Because they go, well, no, we'll just all say no. And what are you going to do? And they're like, well, fine, all of you. Great. Fantastic. Don't care. Because, what, you know, it's the prisoner game, right? First one to capitulate, everyone will follow. So when the ballast water convention came in, everyone's like, eh. And then, you know, the IMO delayed it. So the IMO have occasionally gone, okay, we might have been a bit too strong-armed and you can't literally meet it, so we'll give you an extension. When the SOLAS VGM came into play, the verified gross mass, which was for containerization to make sure your container weighed what you said it weighed and wasn't just like, 20 tons, freight all kinds, because we were having issues where the stability or the trim of the vessel was just not working out because everyone was playing a bit too loose and fast with their weights. That came in and everyone went, they'll give us an extension. And the IMO said, when it comes to safety, we don't play. First of the year, it's going to come in. And it did. And every country... So the IMO will make a, you know, it's got its international convention, but it's up to each country to ratify and put it into its domestic laws how it sees fit. And there was a huge, huge variance. The UK went super hard and was like, we're going to jail people. And Singapore's like, well, here's a fine. And Australia's like, here's a fine. But for everyone involved, everyone who touches it, you're all getting a fine. Congratulations. They did force the carriers to come up with, you know, they had to have new technology, they had to have new vetting processes, they had to have all of that. And that affected every single export and import country of containers globally. And they were all cranky about it. So the IMO does have power because it comes to where the ships are flagged. So the ship will have, we're going to get very technical here. There's a flag state and a port state. So a flag state is where the ship is registered, what flag it flies. Typically, it's like Panama. And that has a set of rules about what it requires for your ship to comply with. But when your ship travels around the world to different jurisdictions, when it goes into a country and goes into a port in that country, that's port state control. And so you have to also comply with the laws of the port that you're visiting. So port state control can come and inspect and say, well, you don't meet the requirements of this port. You might be okay with your flag status, but not your port status. I mean, yes, there can be this perception of the carriers just dictate and everyone bends to their will, but the carriers are funded by or are underpinned with their protection and indemnity insurance, the P&I clubs, and they price the risk. So they don't let the carriers go off and play silly buggers, as a colloquial saying. They pull them to heel and say, we're not going to fund stupidity, essentially. We're not going to fund recklessness. We're not going to fund you just can't be bothered to know what's coming through the pipeline. We're not going to fund laziness because you couldn't be bothered to make your staff do the right thing or to train your staff. So there is checks and balances. It's very much hidden from the public because it just gets more and more, I think, bizarro world because it's so unique. Like, what other companies are really adhering to these, you know, movable and moving feasts, right? It's like, oh, I don't like the laws of my flag. I'll change flags. Okay, you can do that.
But within reason that you can get insurance.
Your P&I club might go, no, absolutely. You're fine. You can have that flag. You're not having your ship on our list. Or the ports might go, that's great, but no, you're not coming in if you're on that flag.
That brings me to another place where I probably got my perceptions and maybe others, which was the show The Simpsons, where I can remember a ship, they were just waiting for international waters. And as soon as they got to international waters, there was monkey knife fighting on the ship, which doesn't seem accurate to me looking back. I think there's this mythic status for international waters and that anything goes on these ships.
It is and it isn't, right? It is and it isn't. I'm going to blow everyone's minds. So once you get the 12 nautical miles out, yes, you're still in the EEZ, the economic exclusion zone for that country until it abuts another person's EEZ. But the thing is, and this was really, really exposed by the Titan submersible that imploded in June this year, because the ship has to be compliant with port state, flag state, P&I club, all of that, right? When it leaves, has to be compliant, gets outside the 12 nautical miles. Theoretically, it could do what it wanted, right? Because the high seas are effectively lawless in peace times. Effectively lawless, right? They're just who's gonna police that? Who's in charge? No one. But then it has to come back into port, right? And to come back into port, it has to have insurance, be flag compliant, be port state compliant, and all of that, right? So at the start of your journey, at the end of your journey, you have to be compliant. In the middle, well, who knows what happens? And I sort of talk about it as in Australia, we have some speed camera traps or whatever, and it's not a point in time. It's between two points so that people can't slow down for the speed camera on a freeway and then speed up in the middle and slow down again. They'll get you point to point and your average has to be under the speed limit. And that's kind of how shipping works, because if something goes wrong in the middle of your voyage, when you're on the high seas, which is the technical term for it, for your insurance coverage to still kick in, you've still got to be compliant. If you want to rely on your insurance and you want people to come help you, you're going to still be compliant. Like, there's no real benefit to not being compliant, because if you're up to no good, you're up to no good for a lot of variety of reasons, such as like spoofing your AIS and taking on, you know, sanctioned cargo and doing all manner of nefarious things. But that then becomes a issue for other jurisdictions to come and, you know, sanctions violations is not fun. So, but yeah, I mean, I can't definitively say that no one's doing monkey knife fighting on ships.
I wish we could say that, but
I can't definitively, with the amount of vessels that are currently at sea at any one time, the shipping lawyer is here to say, I cannot definitively tell you that there isn't monkey knife fighting on board any ship at the high seas. Because also the Simpsons have been right on more than one occasion.
That's true. They do have a good record when it comes to predicting
things. They do have a track record.
Yeah. So, yeah, monkey knife fighting first on this podcast. Another one I mentioned was comic books. And so I want to get to the Container Jack series and kind of, could you tell me a little bit about the origin story of that?
Absolutely. It's super professional, super serious at all times. My marketing staff said, you need to do an ebook, you need to do a lead gen. And I went, okay. And I said, you know, one of the ideas we'd thrown around was five common issues that happens to containers, mostly at sea, right? And so people just don't know about it or can't visualize it. And so there's a disconnect, right, between people on land who are giving the information and the people at sea who are dealing with the impact of that information, rightly or wrongly. And they said, all right, you have to write an ebook. And I said, I have great trust with my team, which is why I could go, I don't want to write an ebook. Oh, it's going to be so boring. Not my current ebook. That's for a different audience. But this was just about the five common issues. I was like, oh my God, I'm just bored thinking about writing this ebook. Like, if I'm bored thinking about it, everyone's going to be bored reading it, right? Like, I don't want to do it. And I was being a real petulant business owner. And then at the same time, my marketing team were learning how to draw comics. They're really into Marvel. As part of their communications degree, had gotten to study Marvel. Like all of the stuff they'd done, their teachers had said, yep, you can study it through the lens of Marvel. That's fine. So they were learning how to draw comics and they were showing me. And I was like, why don't we just do it in comic form? And she's like, but who would we get? And I was like, well, you're the best comic drawer out of the two of us. So congratulations. That's on you. Fantastic. And she's like, but I'm not good enough. And I was like, you're better than me. So there we go. And the first panel, she's like, I'm like, just do one panel. Just do one panel, see how it goes. You know, just not trying to overwhelm and freak them out. And the first one was a container falling overboard and it floating away. And I'm not sure if anyone's actually picked up the fact that it's called Container Jack and the container's called Jack and it's floating away. And it's like, we'll never forget you, Jack. And it's a very millennial Titanic can Jack fit on the door, you know, in joke, which amused us endlessly. And I thought, you know what? I'm the target audience for this comic and I find it funny. So stuff it, let's have at it. And there is a bit of dramatic flair because, you know, container on container violence where, you know, it's actually happened before, right? A steel coil that's not properly lashed in a container with the roll and sway of the ship, because it can get up to like 35 degrees either way, right? And so it's swaying and then it basically rips out the side of the container and takes a few out with it as it goes overboard, you know, and there's a container going, it was the coil's fault. And I was just having a giggle with it. And, you know, as we know, humans will pack bond with just about any inanimate object. And so I thought it was just a fun way to, you know, have a bit of tap into the humor I know exists in the industry. And Splash picked it up and then it pinged around the world and we've done two more issues. We did an Ever series with the Ever Given and the Ever Forward and with the pilots in Chesapeake Bay. But yeah, I just thought, who says it has to be an ebook? Who says it has to be a white paper? I don't know. Let's do something fun and visual and let's, again, help people conceptualize these things. Because if it's a word on a piece of paper, and look, I read for a living, that's my job, but I've worked in-house and worked with a variety of different departments, and you write anything over a paragraph, the shutters come down, there's go, nah, can't process that. So, you know, it was just a safety 101 in a fun way. But yeah, it was really cool. Just, you know, it's like, oh yeah, issued a comic, serious law firm.
How many more issues do you envision in the future? Do you have a number in mind?
We don't have a number. Well, it really depends on my marketing team's kind of, you know, they're the ones who go, we have all these other projects on. We can't just indulge in every whim of yours, Alison. You pay us, but, you know, we've got a maximum capacity. I'd like to keep it going as long as it kind of works and, you know, explore different concepts and, you know, just really bring that to life. Do you know what I mean? Because I think that there's this, I was incredibly fortunate because when I started my career, I was surrounded by master mariners. So sea captains and seafarers who had come ashore and they did the vessel planning. And I learned an incredible amount, not only about the realities of shipping, but just this huge respect for seafarers and the risks and the safety of life at sea convention just really had an impact on me. And I was like, no, I'm going to do everything I can in my power on shore to protect these people because I can stop it here. I can influence safety on shore. You know, but then leaving that world and talking to a number of freight forwarders and cargo interests, the disconnect is huge, right? And it's kind of like, oh, well, here's a widget and I'll copy and paste the widget and and then it all just, there's this phenomenon called Swiss cheese, right, effect, where you have all the different slices of Swiss cheese and when all the holes line up, the problem just sails all the way through. And when the problem sails all the way through, that can mean the ship catches on fire, crew die, the ship sinks to the bottom of the ocean and pollutes the local, you know, marine environment. So for me, that's worst case scenario. That's always what I'm thinking about when I advise people and when I get really passionate about risk and safety, because that's the worst case scenario. It can be life and death. And if a comic's going to make people think twice about not declaring they're hazardous, well, let's do it. So, you know, it's not about lecturing people, it's about educating. So that's what it was. But it was really popular. I'm really excited that everyone loved it.
What are the best ways to keep track of what you're up to, Alison?
Oh, I have LinkedIn for the professionally minded, Alison Cusack. For those who enjoy the more photogenic, consumption of social media, I'm on Instagram, Cusack_and_co. Yes, I know, terrible. But I'm also on TikTok as the shipping lawyer, and I do little updates there. And for those who are business-minded, who are DIY-minded, we are looking after those people, and we're going to be dropping a bunch of checklists, planners, bundles on Etsy. We've launched an Etsy store, and we're going to be doing that because as the economic crunch hits, we know that everyone's tightening their belts. And, you know, for those who are a little bit off-put by lawyers, I understand, and those, you know, want to sort of DIY it, or if you want to talk to a lawyer, maybe me, maybe someone else, but you want to do your homework before it, that's also what it is. You know, I hate to see anyone's business go under because they've made a simple preventable mistake. That's my worst nightmare for people in the shipping industry, to get punished because they can't navigate.
Well, Alison, I really appreciate all you're doing to raise awareness and educate folks about the industry. I appreciate you joining me today. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into this special Freight Friday edition of First State Insights. To learn more about Alison and her work, read the show notes to connect with Alison and Cusack & Company on LinkedIn, Instagram, and TikTok. You can find her book, A Short History of Maritime, on Amazon. For more on the Institute for Public Administration, visit ipa.udel.edu. If you enjoyed this episode, look for past and future episodes of First State Insights wherever you get podcasts. I hope you'll tune in again soon. Take care.